You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world, and I want to thank you for joining us. Look, the world is getting smaller each and every day, and all of this has to do with technology. Technology is bringing everything together, and it has been. If you go back to the 90s till today, you'll see how technology... It just basically has been bringing the world closer and closer, more so now than ever. The tokenization of financial markets, whether it be the New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, CME, and other exchanges and other, you know, banks and financial institutions, they're making it even smaller. They're bringing financial products and opportunities in the financial markets to parts of the world that would normally not have access. It's all about global inclusion and the movement of money in all forms. That is at the center of it all. It's basically moving money in all forms from point A to point B without a ton of intermediaries in the middle. This reduces the fees. It makes things more accessible. Makes things easier to track and trace and understand. But before I go too deep into that, I want to put a focus on bad actors in the world of finance. And I do this for a reason. You have a lot of people, believe it or not, they're in finance, they're investors, they've done a lot of great things, but they wind up getting approached by certain people. And they wind up, you know, getting rooked, for lack of a better phrase. You know, you have fraudsters out there that work the internet like it's a mode of transport, like they're on some sort of plane or train. They paint pictures of themselves being top-notch players in the game. They make themselves look like they're on top of the food chain in the world of finance, artificial intelligence, digital assets, blockchain, commodities, and other areas. A lot work as middlemen, as these, they call themselves intermediaries. And they'll work for years to try and get a deal done. Most times, they never accomplish anything. They try to promote standby letter of credits or medium-term notes as if they are stock, as some sort of equity that can be easily moved around. They paint the picture of serious discounts and quick returns, great gains in a short period of time. You'll buy it at a 60% discount, you'll sell it at 80% the next day, and that's it. Or the next week, or the next month. For an investor, you're like, wow, that's a great return. But remember, if it sounds too good to be true, guess what? It is. And until later, it comes out that a lot of these deals that they bring forward, they don't even exist. Okay, standby letter of credits, they're real. Medium-term notes, they're real. However, in the world of bad actors, they use it as a tool to scam people. Now, let me give you the skinny on standby letter of credits, or SBLCs. SBLCs are not automatically transferable, and you'll see a lot of that out there, that they say, hey, you know, this will be transferred to you. That's not the case. They operate under ICC rules, International Chamber of Commerce rules, UCP 600 and ISP 98. And if it doesn't explicitly state that the SBLC is transferable, if it is not seen and verified by a legal entity, then guess what? It's not. If it says transferable, well, then drawing rights can be transferred to another beneficiary, and that's normal, practice, such as a supplier, financing partner. So let's say a company is trading in physical gold, oil, or agri products. There would be a use case for it. But bear in mind, this needs to be verified through a legal process. Otherwise, down the little rabbit hole you go. And they wind up pushing you down there, and you can't see anything. And if you know what a rabbit hole looks like, if you see the video of it, you'll understand exactly what that means. If an SPLC can't say assignment of proceeds, it can't do that, right? That's different than it being transferable. And all that means is that the payment proceeds can be assigned. And probably the rarest, and you won't see this often, but I'm going to mention it anyway, is that it's the assignment of performance rights. And basically, that's seriously restricted. It'll never come up. I just figured I'd mention it because it's part of things that can happen. But in reality, it's not going to happen. But even in further reality, banks, the big players in the game, they do not like transferability. And there are reasons for it. They're highly complex. They expose the bank to anti-money laundering exposure. It basically puts it out there. They can get into a lot of trouble. And then you have a heightened risk of fraud. And that's what we're talking about right now. The fraud. Now let's move on to medium-term notes. Now let me tell you what a medium-term note is, if you don't know. It's a debt instrument. It's issued under a broader note issuance program. And typically, you have issuers, they include banks, corporations, supranational, sovereign-like entities, that type of, those type of issuers. Some examples include programs by JP Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, HSBC, Toyota Motor Corporation, and the list goes on. Now, what MTNs do, medium-term notes, they're MTNs, what MTNs do, they provide flexible borrowing and rolling issuance capability. Maturity customization, multi-currency issuance. And remember, when they are issued, they're issued through the SEC or whatever regulatory body. You won't have a private MTN sitting in somebody's vault, in their safety deposit box, or under their bed, or in their shoe. Okay, that is not the case. You have traceability there. So instead of them launching a full bond offering each time they need to go raise capital, raise debt capital, issuers, they'll maintain a shelf-like program, have it on the shelf so they can pull it off when they need to, as they need to raise capital or debt capital. Okay? And that's it. That's what they do. It's a shelf program, pretty much. And now that we know that there are legitimate debt instruments like medium-term notes, let's jump into where the fraud can come into play, because you'll hear about medium-term notes as investors if you're out there, but you need to know where the fraud begins. And most times they start at the private placement level, where you have private placement MTN programs, where you have fraudsters, these scamming sons of guns. They will claim to have access to some secret institutional trading platforms, that only the Rothschilds have access to, or some elite group. But you normally wouldn't have, but they're going to bring you in because they have the key to that door, right? So it makes you feel special. Don't feel so special. They're greasing you up for for the next phase. They talk about discounted MTN, some top banks, and give guaranteed high returns. You can get it at 60% discount. You can sell it, at 80% discount. You can do this and do that. You can get all this done within a day, a week, a month. You get all this stuff on, and you'll make all this money. And guess what? It's all nonsense. It's just to get you in, get you into their web. You may see this nonsense called high-yield trading programs. Oh, my, you hear that? Please run, jump, get on a boat, get in your Lamborghini, get out. Get on a plane, get away from these people. This is by far one of the oldest financial fraud schemes globally. These scammers, these fraud promoters, they claim elite traders, these elite guys that are doing stuff. They have central bank relationships. They have bank debenture trading, secret liquidity desks, things behind the door like it's a speakeasy. Like they can get you in there, come in, I'll be your special envoy to the promised land. Meanwhile, as they're walking you through the door, they have their hands in your pockets, taking your money and ready to kick you in the butt through there. And then you notice you go into that room, it's a cliff, and you're falling off the cliff. That's what they do to you. Okay? And they often reference MTNs, SBLCs, bank guarantees, that type of thing. Again, all nonsense. Institutional MTNs are not traded like this at all. Actual MTN markets are highly, 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 highly regulated. No joke about it. They involve institutional counterparties, and they do not generate absurd risk-free returns. It's ridiculous, but people believe it. Why do they believe it? Because they want to believe it. They want to believe that they're special. They want to believe that these people that have been working them do this. I mean, you see, you know, this is the equivalent of pig butchering, or, you know, of these romance scams. There's no difference. They're kind of gearing you up to go do this thing. And they'll give you paperwork, they'll give you this, give you that, you know, but at the end of the day, man, you can't verify anything, and at the end of the day, you're going to wind up losing. And here are some red flags. And I'm going to give you these red flags because you need to know this stuff. You know, because any investors, you see stuff on message boards and everything, but you want these are the red flags. Look out for this. When you have this promotion of an invitation-only platform, they're going to walk you in, right? Claims of having secret Fed platforms, like they have an in right there with the chairman of the Fed. Yeah, Kevin Walsh He's going to be the new chairman. I doubt that he's talking to them. All right? Okay, then you have, you know, the IMF trading desk. This is what they say. And hidden bank screens behind, one screen behind another. They just show it to you for a second. They give you a screen printout, and then that's it. Good luck trying to verify that on Bloomberg, because most normal people do not. Normal investors do not have access to Bloomberg unless they're spending a few grand a month on it. Now, it really sounds really like you're being given some secret access where only the elite are welcome. As I mentioned earlier, that only the elite, only the wealthiest of the top 0.01% in the world are allowed there. They're allowed into the smoke-filled room with the Chesterfield chairs and the mahogany walls. They're bringing you in there. Don't buy it. It's all smoke and mirrors and bull crap. Don't buy it. And here is the best, and this is when you're dealing with this stuff. You know, they name drop, and the fraudsters, these scammers, they'll use names like HSBC, UBS, JP Morgan, Deutsche Bank, and for the most part, this is what they're using. But others have been used as well. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, they have zero involvement. These are scams on scams on scams. This is how they get you. And you want to not be gotten, okay? This is why I'm even speaking about this on this show, to give you some insight. Now, these fraudsters will ask an investor to have block fund structures. Dude, this is where they get you too. Where they have to show, you have to show proof of funds. You have to place assets in escrow, right? Or pay a compliance fee. It's all a scam. They're trying to grab your identity. Trying to grab your banking information. And they try, at the very least, to get a fee from you, and poof, pow, they're gone. Into the wind they go. You'll never hear from them again. You won't see anything on the internet about them again. And trust me, in the world of AI, you'll have fake things going out there. And we, you know, look, I've come across all this stuff. This is why I'm able to speak about this with authority. To help, you know, investors that have experienced this. And the best is when they use NDA heavy structures. They try to scare you. They try to invoke some excessive secrecy so that, hey, you know, you can't tell anyone, not even your attorney, about this, so that it discourages legal review or creates an illusion of exclusivity. Again, all nonsense. Avoid it. Anyhow, in short, you as an investor, if you come across some middleman promoting this to you, or you see it on some type of message board, do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Do your family a favor. Run. Run and run fast. You do not want to be scammed. You do not want to deal with this. Deal with real things. Okay, now talking about real things, I want to move on from SBLCs and MTN scams and let's go on to greener pastures. Okay, I want to talk about something more enlightening, and that's called stablecoins. Now, a lot of people have heard stablecoins. They heard the terminology. It's something that you had, you know, Tether, you know, they, I mean, if you want to give a term, probably the grandfather of the stablecoin market, and they are the biggest in the game. They defined it, redefined it, and it's, you know, it was a great thing. Now, the issue there is that you have other players that came into the game, and now more so you have a lot of players, a lot of banks and everything, they're doing all this. The stablecoin market in itself, that market cap is around between 300 and 325 billion. Let me say it again. 300 and 325 billion dollars. And that's led by USDT and USDC. They are the top, they're the biggest in the game. Okay, they have a dominant share. They account for 90% of all stablecoin activity, all stablecoin supply actually out there. Okay, and the transaction volume is staggering. And these are key facts as of today. Staggering. Stablecoins, I mean, you're talking about between 27 and 35 trillion dollars in on-chain volume. Okay, that's surpassing Visa and MasterCard combined. And that's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay, the stablecoins represent probably about 40% of all crypto trading volume globally. All right, they're used now as a primary settlement rail for centralized exchanges, DeFi's, OTC desks, and whatnot. But what's happening is they're further being utilized. By, you know, and now they're it's gonna start coming out this year, where you have the SWIFT system, Western Union, and other may bigger players. You know, you have PayPal, they have their stable coin. You have, you know, JP Morgan within their system, they have a stable coin system in there, that, you know, within their own blockchain, but they're actually opening that up in their ways to have some sort of interoperability, because they want to bring people in, bring other institutions in. You have HSBC, they're doing stuff. You have other groups that are doing things. It's really dynamic, and the growth is really going to be something else. Okay, and stablecoins, they're increasingly being used for remittances, B2B payments, and treasury flows, especially in the emerging markets. And this is where the key thing is. You have a lot of people that are unbanked all over the world. And having the ability to go and utilize stablecoins in order to bring them into the modern times, this is one of the biggest and greatest things that stablecoins can do. Promoting global inclusion, giving people an opportunity to be part of the greater financial ecosystem. Right? You know, the stablecoins, what they're doing right now, they're driving digital dollarization in Latin America, Africa, and Southeast Asia. It's basically making the U.S. dollar more dominant than it ever has been. And people don't realize it, but this is what's happening. You'll have, you'll have stable coins representing euro and other currencies, right? I mean, they have a place. However, you're talking about domination. US dollar denominated stable coins. That is where the big play is, and it will be for some time. And it's already there now. It's going to continue to be there, and just basically a bigger and bigger. Now, the EU's MiCA framework, they introduce strict rules for some things. And then you have a lot of companies, as I mentioned, they're using stable coins for instant settlement, even payroll, supplier payments. They're utilizing it to move money to avoid dealing with the intermediaries, because those intermediaries within transactions, that is where the big fees come out. And that's where a lot of things, you know, where you can save a lot of money, and companies are realizing this, that they can save a lot of money. You know, bank adoption. You have a lot of banks, and as I mentioned, you know, HSBC and JP Morgan, they're integrating stable coins to fast settlement. You have BlackRock, you have other players, Morgan Stanley, and you have a lot of fintech companies that are integrating stable coins for the faster settlement and liquidity management. And it's just going to increase in scope as we move on from this year to next year, when you have other players coming in the game. Okay, you know, you have a lot of different stable coins out there. You have USDC, you have USDT, which is the top USDC, and then you have, you know, PayPal stablecoin, and then you have others, and you have USXM, which is probably one of the most interesting stablecoins that you will come across today. You know, where you have USDT, it is one issuer, period, the end. They control everything. With USXM, you have that main USXM stablecoin, but you can have multiple issuers, because you have an issuer keyed system, which allows an issuer to be an issuer and still be part of the greater ecosystem. So they don't have to go and create a new stablecoin. It's part of something bigger. And they control their environment. It's a beautiful thing. Okay, you have, you know, what stablecoins actually are doing, as I said, US dollar denominated, they eliminate the FX exposure across the board and cross-border flows from keeping value in USD until conversion. So basically, it's putting the power of that conversion in the hand of the holder, right? They convert it when they want to, not when they have to. They can hold it. They can hold a stable coin and say, hey, you know what? I want to convert it today to US dollars. Oh, I have my US dollars. I want to convert the US dollars to whatever currency. It's up to them when they do it. So it eliminates that FX exposure, eliminates that FX, you know, exchange fee that most companies, remittance companies, money transfer companies would experience. It changes the business model, simplifies it, makes it better. Stablecoin-based remittances are growing 5 to 10x faster than traditional remittance growth has ever happened. Okay. That means that you're going to have stable coins that are going to dominate the remittance arena, dominate with a capital D. And because you have a decentralized finance backbone, well, stable coins, they're the core collateral for lending, liquidity pools, and derivatives in DeFi. And, you know, as opposed to solely being, you know, a stable coin, or a liquidity pool solely being dominated by the native token, there are options there. Okay. Now, transparency. This is a big thing. You know, you need transparency. Okay. So when you're talking about, you know, having high fidelity data in a token, you know, in a stable coin, it's important. So you know who's who and what's what. Most stablecoins do not have that high fidelity data. They're pushed across different chains, which is fine. You know, like USDT, USDC, they're on different chains doing different things, but they comply to that chain's rules and regulations, whatever they have in place, right? They're rules of the road. When you have USXM, it is built on the Pico Nova's blockchain, and the Pico Nova's blockchain is unique in nature for the high fidelity data that it brings to the table, however, with their PMP 16. But however, when you're speaking about protocol level enhancements, just recently, you know, you had ERC20 and EVM compatibility integrated on a protocol level. And what does that mean for USXM? Well, it can ride on Ethereum rails. on any platform, any platform, any exchange, anything that goes and allows or integrates ERC-20 standards into their platform, they can integrate it easily right into it. And they can go to Chainlist, take the key, boom, you're in like Flynn. You're getting things done. And the great thing about it is that you have a low cost basis and you're serving the same purpose. And if you're talking about Ethereum, you have a lot of from Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, I think JP Morgan, and a few other big players in finance. They're basically going and they're issuing their money markets and things like that. They're issuing this stuff and bonds and debt instruments, and they're doing this stuff, you know, on Ethereum rails. And what that means too is that now you have the ability for some interoperability there, right? So there's gonna be an ability to go and do things seamlessly between the chains, and that's really important for global growth, because no matter what anyone says, Ethereum is the dominant player, as far as infrastructure, dominant, and any platform, any blockchain that integrates ERC-20, not a bridge. I'm not talking about a bridge making some connection. I'm talking about integrated on a protocol level. That's the play. That's the play, and that's where things get a lot better, right? It's not about a bridge. It's about having it on a protocol level. Now, hedge funds, market makers, corporate entities, they're increasingly preferring stablecoin over bank wires. For speed, liquidity, they know what they're dealing with. They know what fees, they know when it gets done, that I have X amount, this is what's coming in, this is my fee, I know it is done, boom, let's convert it. They know what they're dealing with. They're avoiding the middle market fee structure. Okay, and stable coins in emerging markets, they're becoming a store of value in some cases in inflation-heavy economies, because if you have instability with the currency, with a fiat currency in a certain country, they're going to want to roll into something. They roll into a stable coin, they're stable, and they can always roll out of it if they need to into their local currency. And that's a really good feature for inflation heavy economies. And because stable coins, there are ways you can enable automatic settlement, escrow, conditional payments, blah blah blah. The programming part of it is a key thing. All right, it's because you can add it same way you would do with the banking but money in a bank. You know, you're dealing with a bank, you're doing these things. You can do the same thing with stablecoin. Okay, and when the competition shifts in this space, the fintech companies, banks, payment companies, they're launching, stable coins, to adhere to the frameworks that are out there. And this stuff is going to continue to expand. All right, now I'm going back to the USXM opportunity. It's a purpose-built stable coin. It can target remittance, FX avoidance, and cross-border settlement, where traditional stable coins are weak. It is strong, and this is why these things should be looked at. All right, I wanted to go and touch on the stablecoin market on Money Never Sleeps today, and also touch on the fraud that takes place, with SBLCs, MTNs, and the like. Reason being is that I think these things are important, and for those that aren't aware, hopefully this gave you a little insight to what happens. What happens in these spaces, for good, for bad, for indifferent. Being educated on it, I think is an important factor, and I hope that we achieve that on this show today. But other than that, I want to thank you for joining us today, taking time out of your day, of your life, to listen to my rant on these topics. And I want to wish each and every one of you a fantastic trading day. Go make it happen, and just be aware of what I mentioned on the beginning of the show with the fraud that goes out there, and be also aware of what the future holds in front of you, and that is the stablecoin market. All right, thank you again. and you guys have a fantastic trading day.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Belafkath and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.